It's good. I can put the libelous things at the back of the podcast. It's all change at Reading FC. We are back to winning ways, everybody. Welcome to Tyler Sten Podcast, episode 140. It is the new TT era with your new host, Mark Mayo here, reporting on what is a fantastic win for all concerned. No matter what part of the season you're in, winning 1-0 away at Leeds is always something to enjoy. Yap Stam has been throwing in some new tactics. He's had the international break to go over what he thinks does and doesn't work about the team. And, well, 91st minute penalty saves will always work when you need them the most. Talking of some new ideas and new inspirations, I'm sat here with Steve, aka Royal Hoops Curtis. Steve, thank you for joining.
No problem. Good evening.
Thank you very much. Well, it's a new duo for the moment. We'll talk about how the new hosting and the new rotor and everything will be moved around as we go through the show. For example, the podcast extra will be back on the 27th, those who are waiting for it. The Patreon campaign is still always going for us. I don't have any the list of the people who are joining us at the moment. Wimmer hasn't actually handed that over to me yet.
Poor show.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the cash hasn't come either, now we think about it.
No. Well, dodgy.
Well, yeah. We're still waiting to find out what Wim is off to. I think bigger and better things. I do have some insider information, actually, is that just look out for next year's Great British Bake Off lineup.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
Absolutely. So, of course, we'll dig into the 1-0 win at Leeds now with the recap.
The Tylehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So, Steve, we all sat there on Saturday afternoon awaiting the team announcement, knowing that the international break wasn't exactly ended in the best terms for Reading and that something new was going to have to happen, something interesting was going to have to inspire this team to take a good result away at Leeds United, who have been doing very well themselves this year, it's fair to say. What was the first thing that popped into your mind when it turned out that we're playing a 4-4-2?
Well, that was exactly it. When the lineups were announced, I was really confused. I was like, is that a 4-4-2? Yap Stam doesn't play 4-4-2. And I asked the group chat and Sim was like, oh no, it's probably a 5-2-3 or something like that. I was going, yeah, but it really looks like it suits a 4-4-2, and it really was totally out of nowhere, really. He'd obviously picked up the phone to Steve Coppell or something during the break.
Well, I'd written an opinion piece on the website during the break and said 4-2-3-1 is the way to go. And I kind of imagine it with a Luko behind Bodvarsson, but I'm not sure that's actually what we got. It was pretty much a flat two banks of four with Bodvarsson. I mean, you look at on his who scored rating for the game, and I think it was like 6.4 or something crap. But we all know that Bodvarsson, you know, he plays a different type of game. He's not the type one that anyone who watched him play for Iceland would have known. He excels as that kind of alternative striker role, isn't it? It's a different sort of...
I wouldn't say he's in the team to score goals necessarily, which sounds weird when you're talking about a striker, but I think his role in the team is there to like be a focal point for the team, bring others into play, and he's not necessarily the goal scorer we would hope he would be.
Yeah.
But he brings other players like Aluko and McCleary into play. And in this 4-4-2 that we ended up playing, it really worked because it meant that Aluko then had more room and flick-ons to feed off, and I thought he looked quite bright.
Yeah, when you say about McCleary, it's interesting that Yap Stam still preferred Roy Burns and Gareth McCleary as the wingers. Modibau obviously coming off the bench. That's a continuation from last year, isn't it, really? That everything works out with those two wingers as to, you know, maybe both getting up and down the pitch quite well, both working hard.
Yeah, it's obviously a pairing he likes. I mean, I know a lot of fans aren't exactly sold on Behrens. They're not sure what he brings.
He's never been massively popular, has he?
No, I mean, I know when he joined and everyone got really excited because he looked skillful. He looked like a game changer. He's going to do something amazing. And Stam himself was talking him up, saying, you know, he's got this magic touch. But none of us have really seen it consistently. But he obviously does something that fans don't appreciate, but Stam does. I don't know whether it's some tactical flexibility or intelligence or movement, but there's something there that Stam likes.
Yeah, and speaking of players who don't always do things that are appreciated by the fans, Joey Vandenberg appeared with an absolutely cracking assist, wasn't it? The way that he takes out three defenders with a sort of feint to shoot, and it's not the player that I thought had that in him.
No, I mean, when we all think of him, we think of him as a defender or a defensive midfielder, someone that's sitting there and breaking up play. You know, we talk about playing 4-3-3, and he'd be the one that sits in front of the defence and breaks play up and then passes it on, but this kind of harks back to his times in the Dutch league. I seem to remember when we got a view from the town end when he first joined, and they were saying he's not massively great being a sitting defender because he likes to bomb on a bit. We haven't really seen that at Reading, but I think this game showcased that.
Yeah, well, the thing I remember about signing Vandenberg was that at the time we signed him, he was the joint record holder for sendings off in the top Dutch flight. And I think that gave us all the sense that, hang on, we got a bit of a tough tackle here.
Yeah.
Just turns out it's not quite the best asset of his game. Mo Bauer off the bench then. Is he a super sub or is he knocking on the door to start now?
I think he's got to be starting. I think he's just so good and so electrifying. He scares the opposition and he can do that from the first minute. He doesn't have to come off the bench to do that. But I think he's just come back from an injury or something. I feel like he's coming back.
He's not been available for selection every week, has he?
Yeah, so I feel like he's on the way back and probably working his way back into the first team. McCleary actually looked kind of close back to his best at the weekend, which was interesting.
He needs to be fit, doesn't he?
Especially considering he didn't have Gunter behind him. Normally when he's at his best, it's him and Gunter on that right wing and they're kind of overlapping and reuniting that Nottingham Forest partnership. But yeah, I think him being a more traditional right winger at the weekend probably helped him out and made him feel more comfortable than what he's been asked to do under Stam previously. Although, having said that, I've just remembered how great a season he had last season.
Yeah, so, well, as he's been keen to point out on Twitter recently as well.
Yeah, so, do you know what? It's good to have so many options, and it's great that you can take off a winger and bring on someone like Barrow, you know.
And in terms of options, we've discovered that we have a third left-back and a second right-back as well this weekend, with Chris Gunter starting on the left and Leandro Bakuna on the right. Bakuna making a great goal-saving challenge, I think it was in the second half, to deny what was basically going to be a tap-in for a Leeds player. I found it a little bit odd, though, because Jordan Obisa, who we'll come on to a bit later, unavailable. But, you know, we've got Tyler Blackett, who wasn't picked at left-back, and Omar Richards, who's the up-and-coming young player who has been involved this season, wasn't picked at left-back. Was this horses for courses, or is this what we're going to see for the foreseeable future?
I think it's partly just down to experience in a big game at Leeds, who are, you know, is a game you need to at least draw at because you never want to go away and lose. So I think it's more experience. Gunter's experienced, he, you know, and his end product isn't that great anyway, so putting him on the left doesn't affect things. Bakuna played right back for Aston Villa for a long time, so I feel like in this particular game it worked well. You've got Gunter's energy, but I think we'll probably see some kind of rotation going on in the long term. You'll probably see Blackett come in, Richards will probably come in for cup games and stuff, but yeah, it could work in the long term. I didn't see anything at the weekend to suggest it wouldn't work every week.
Yeah, it is. It's not the type of partnerships where you say, well, if we're playing at home against Burton, that'd be an awful, you know, you'd still have Bakuna at right back and Gunter at left back and be confident with that at home to lesser teams, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, with that pairing, the thing that you get with Gunter at left back that you don't get with Blackett is he bombs up and down. Even though he might not be that big an attacking presence, he's still there and he still gives people something to think about.
Yeah, the effort's always going to be there.
Whereas Blackett, if he plays left, you know, he's almost hesitant to go over the halfway line. And if he does go that far, he doesn't really do much in the final third. So Gunter at least gets up there and gives other people something to think about.
I don't know. I still think Blackett's a little bit underrated when it comes to attacking, but we'll hold off on that for the moment. And I'll let him do his talking on the pitch before he needs me leaping to his defence. I'll throw some, let's call it stat attack. I don't think anyone does a stat attack in the local media, so we'll jump into...
No. Claim it. It's yours. Claim it.
We'll jump into some stats. There's 44% possession and 69% pass success rate. The latter is a bit of a, you know, an anomaly as it happens. But 44% possession, we can all quantify that. That's by far the lowest we've had in recent weeks.
Do you know what? We talk about the 4-4-2, but we haven't really talked about the change in style that Stam did. And I think in this game, it almost didn't look like they cared about having that much possession. I mean, they still played a nice passing game when they had the ball, but they weren't hogging it and just having it for the sake of it. It almost seemed like they were being more intentional with the ball, a little bit quicker, a little bit more direct. And I think we need to give Stam some credit for doing that kind of thing and making those changes, because we were saying before the international break, he's too stubborn, it's all going downhill, and yet he's going to keep doing the same thing, we're all fed up with the way we're playing and all of this kind of stuff. And then we come back from the international break, he's gone 4-4-2, he's gone a little bit more direct, he's kind of sacrificed the possession game, and we've come away with a really good win. So he deserves credit for that.
Yeah, there was a bit of a sacrifice, and he spoke about it after the game, and I think one of the telling comments he said was, you know, we had to change the way we played and that not all the players liked that. And I found that a bit of an odd one, that it would be the players who, you'd think the players would do anything that makes them win, you know, they won't mind it as far as I could. But maybe that is the dynamic within the team, maybe that's a bit of a shedding the light on that. Leeds also dispossessed 17 times, and that is a, you know, for any game, that's a substantial amount of just disruption that we were able to cause them.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely part of what the game plan was. It was, don't sit back, don't let them play their game. You need to kind of get in their face, and even if we're not pressing high up, you need to like just rough them up a bit and try and play them at their own game, because we all know Leeds in the past have been quite hard. So, so you know, I think it's kind of, don't give them an easy ride. Even if we lose, we need to go down fighting. And it felt like it was that kind of game where we weren't going to go down without a fight. And you know, it was good to see. And it did, I mean, I said earlier about the Koppel, but it did hark back to those 4-4-2 Brian McDermott, Steve Koppel kind of days, where it was like, oh, we're just fighting and we're really going for it, you know. Yeah, we're trying to
Fancy. We'll want it more. And to be honest, like, this is, I mean, I'm about to throw a bit of a spanner in the works in a moment for this whole positivity debate, but the positive thing that I'm taking from this certainly is that this style is translatable. We can do this in, you know, at least 15 games of the season, we can play like that, and it's the best way to get results. Even in the games at home to Leeds and whatnot, it's not a bad idea just to let them make the errors, and then we'll pick up the pieces.
Yeah, and I think away from home, this tactic would work especially well, because you have the two banks of four. They were deep, they were compact, they worked well as a unit. And when you're away from home, that's kind of what you need, because it's on the home team really to have the attacking impetus. So for Reading to be able to go away and show that they can actually be defensive and not try and impose their own game on the opposition is a good thing. We kind of saw something like that in the playoffs last season, where Stam kind of went a bit more defensive and robust, but he hasn't shown that so far this season. So this game was a nice surprise.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, in the playoffs last year, we won 1, drew 2 against two very good teams. So it's not like it was a bad experience in that sense. However... And there is a however. we were a penalty kick away from dropping 2 points in a game that we, you know, had a few more chances than the home team. But ultimately, once you take the lead in the 84th minute, you have to see it out. Mm-hmm. And we very nearly didn't. Did we get away with one?
Well, it was a really poor penalty.
True.
Really awful penalty. But, you know, I think it was just, they shouldn't have given it. As with almost every penalty, it was a really clumsy challenge. It wasn't really worth making. And it's worth pointing out at this point that Leeds did have other chances to score. It wasn't a walk in the park for Reading at all. But they kind of clung on and they got that goal. So then to give a penalty away so late in the game felt just... It was infuriating. It was like, we're all so happy, and then suddenly the clumsy challenge gives a penalty. Yeah, it's how do you stop that? Because it's almost like a mental problem. It feels like they almost switched off a bit. They were like, oh, we've won the game. Oh my gosh. And then before the whistle had blown, they kind of already gone back to the dressing room and kind of forgot that they had to close out the game.
Yeah, and it is annoying in a large sense, because that switching off sort of mentality, it's the last thing that you deal with. Once everything else is going swimmingly, then you deal with the whole mentality of not paying attention and just seeing through the games and getting that winning mentality. But, you know, we did it against Fulham. We almost did it against Villa. It seems like it's asking Stam a lot, I think, to be expecting him to sort out the tactics and the selection and the mentality all in, you know, one big go. I don't know how long he's spending at the training ground, but he must
not enough hours in the day to fix all of that.
Exactly, yeah. So it's just one of those things that's going to run and run, I'm afraid. We're going to have to see how well the team can deal with these situations. And maybe, just maybe at some point, we'll score maybe 3 or 4 goals.
Oh, that would be a treat.
And then it would be really easy seeing out the game, wouldn't
it? Yeah, I mean, part of the seeing out the game, you know, Stam has got this side so comfortable on the ball, passing it around and keeping it away from opponents. You know, we don't use it well to attack, but we use it well to defend and keep it away from opponents. So you'd think you score a goal and then you go back to that. You keep the ball, you knock it around, keep it away from Leeds, don't let them near you. And yet, we can't do that when we're seeing out a game, but we can see it when we need to score. It's odd.
Yeah, there's sometimes football has no logic. Speaking of which, I wanted to just think about Leeds for a moment, because they've had selection issues. The people are questioning the manager with, I think it's Vieira and Dallas, the people that should be starting that aren't, allegedly. They're all possession, no output. Good start to the league season, sort of falling away now. And yet, obviously, they called Reading boring last season, which we shall never forget on this podcast, at least. It's also kind of familiar, isn't it? Their young, upcoming foreign manager is having the same problems that our young, upcoming foreign manager has experienced as well.
Yeah, and I think we shouldn't stop asking those questions of Stam after one game. So, you know, he's done it this once, but if he goes back to the same old style next game and we just see the same mistakes again, then has he learned, or is it more of a lucky thing? But yeah, it's odd seeing them kind of go through the same thing that we're going through. And I think, yeah, their selection issues, I don't really understand that, because Reading have injuries and selection problems as well. So in this one-to-one game, it doesn't play a part. But yeah, I don't know how they solve that. You kind of just have to hope that the manager
figures
that out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Unless you're going to hold a big banner up before every game and have like 11 names on it. Like, these ones, please.
Play these guys.
Yeah. I think this plan ahead, as it were, for how I'm looking at it, is, has Stam learnt these lessons? Has he just done it for one game, and is he going to flip back, like you say, or are we now going to see a different Reading? And to be honest, I really don't know which one it's going to be at the moment.
I mean, I look at that formation, I look at the players we've got available, and I do think, like you argued, 4-2-3-1 would work, 4-4-2 would work. You know, we've got the players, and when you haven't got the one proven goal scorer who is going to win you games on his own, you almost have to play two up front so that you have like twice the threat.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we haven't got that one amazing goal scorer unless Kermigan comes back and is suddenly back to his brilliant best that he was last season. So I think playing two up front works well, and if you have two backs of four, that keeps the defensive solidity. So we just have to hope that Sam's actually taking notes, listening to this podcast, notes and going, the fans like this, I'll keep doing this.
We've always encouraged Stam listening to this podcast. However, I'm pretty sure the only time that Stam heard the words, he was asked, I think, at the Star meeting, is like just after he'd signed, he did one fans forum, and I think he got introduced to Wim. And I think they said, are you aware of the Tyler Stand? And he was like, no. And that was that. And it probably hasn't changed.
We need to get a banner out. Yes, get a banner out of the stadium.
Yeah, they talk about putting, you know, players' names and everything on the back of the stand and everything. We need a big old Tyler Stand.
Yeah, Tyler Stand. Yeah.
And the podcast, and maybe a link as well, just to really, you know, hammer home the point.
Yeah. Get him to subscribe to the Patreon. There you go.
He's got some cash as
well.
Yeah,
he must do. Yeah, there you go.
Definitely. Well, we'll be having a quick look ahead to the transfer window, and also a young striker who is doing very well in India on his travels. Bit of a gap year, that, isn't it? In the News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Isn't it nice when your work takes you on a lovely trip abroad?
I've never had work that's taken me on a trip abroad.
Well, one man who has had that is Danny Loader. And he's currently in India having bags of fun, and he's not even having to work that hard, because I don't think he's starting every game for the England under 17 team at the World Cup, who are into the second round, and their final group game was against Iraq, and Danny Loader scored a brace.
Oh, yeah, well, he did. He looked really bright in pre-season, didn't he? He looked like the kind of player that people were starting to get like really high expectations. Yeah,
16
for.
As well, which is a little bit early. For
He's our bright new hope. Bring him in. We don't need a new striker. We've got Danny Loader, which, you know, it's obviously too soon for him in the first team, especially with Sam Smith, who seems to be the preferred young option.
Yeah, he's
at
a couple
the moment.
Of school years ahead, in effect, isn't he?
But having said that, you know, from what we've seen, from what we're reading, he does look like a very exciting player and someone that has kind of come out of nowhere. I haven't really heard his name. You know, when they're like 14, 15, you normally hear a couple of
they mentions. Try and get them on the pitch. Yeah, they do. Like, the club do really push.
And
like
he's kind of just appeared in the past year or so. So I think it's really exciting. And I'm sure we'll be seeing him in a cup game or loaned out to a lower league team before we know it, really.
Yeah, and I think with the whole striker issue, I think it is quite pertinent. And I don't, you know, it's been a little bit of a while since we've had an academy breakout, isn't it? We've had Liam Kelly last season, who was really a breakout out of nowhere. Other than that, we have been scratching around a little bit. So who knows what happens. Yeah. That obviously
Dom Samuel had a good crack of the whip last year. It didn't work out. But he's doing quite well at Blackburn. So.
As is Tariq Fosu at Charlton.
Yeah, so maybe it's just a case of we're not giving him...
That's what Danny Lola's career needs. We need to sell him to like Wigan and then he'll fly.
With a buyback clause.
Yes.
That's we need to start doing that to all the academy players we loan out.
Yeah, Real Madrid had the idea with that. And Real Madrid, as my day job, been doing articles on how Real Madrid are scouting basically every game at the Under-17 World Cup. So if Zidane, if you maybe on Bushwatch, if Zidane appears on Bushwatch, then we know that Lola's off. That's that then, isn't
that
it?
That would be great.
Well, also not great in a large sense.
No.
But anyway, if you want to keep track of Danny Loader's Indian exploits, Japan are playing England in the second round. I think it's probably about midday-ish on Tuesday. It's usually on US Sports. You can keep an eye on that if you have the correct subscriptions and whatnot to your television set. Speaking of young academy players that have come through the team, Jordan Obita is out for the season. That's been confirmed by the club now. Knee ligament damage he suffered against Hull. He's had surgery. And I actually spotted him on Paul McShane's Instagram story a couple of days ago, walking around on crutches.
Oh, okay. So,
he's at the training ground and doing his rehab, I think. Mm.
I mean, I wrote a piece on the Telus and saying just how bad this news is for Reading. I think Obita is the only actual natural experienced left back we've got. Two, he actually offers an attacking end product that none of our other fullbacks offer. As energetic as Gunter is, he doesn't offer that crossing ability that Obita does. And, you know, it is a massive blow, especially when you've only got Blackett or Gunter or Richards to come in and play that role for the rest of the season. I think he needs replacing in January.
Well, on the website, we did have a piece about Stephen Quinn being a potential left-back solution. And we put this to the Twitterati, who have said that Blackett is pretty much the favourite at the moment. We did a quick poll on Twitter asking what, you know, is your preferred option to replace Obita in the short term. We didn't actually have Chris Gunter on it because we didn't think he was going to be playing left back. Maybe things would change now if we ran it again. But Tyler Blackett had 35%, just ahead of Omar Richards on 33%, and then Quinn with 23% of the vote in that sense. Blackett just edging out Omar Richards, which is a little bit of a surprise given, you know, how little we've seen of Richards.
Yeah, but I think people, in the games he's played, he hasn't looked like like a bad player. He's looked like he's got
place.
Potential. Mm. And I think, especially, it's kind of like a circle. It's like, Obita's out injured. Oh, quick, bring in his replacement from the academy. And it's just a bit of a romantic view, really, isn't
it? I think that was how Obita really got his good run, wasn't it? With Wayne Bridge being... when he got injured, that was Obita sort of beck and call, as it were, for
so,
Matt Atkins.
I think, do you know what? Even if we don't sign the left back in January, no, even if we do sign the left back in January, sorry, then I reckon he'll still get a good look in because we haven't got that many options for that. And I think, especially if Blackett has to be called into centre back for, you know, McShane's been out.
Yeah, we're playing three at the back.
We're playing three at the back. You know, he'll still get the odd chance. So I don't think we should write off that, you know, he's not going to see game time again this season. But I think, especially for a game like Leeds, you don't want to throw Richards into a game like that. So
yeah, and I just think with the defender especially, that sort of loan period that they spend out in Leagues 1 and 2 is not only telling for their ability, but it's so important for their development, because defending, especially against, you know, I think it's Pablo Hernandez was the Leeds winger on the weekend, and he's an experienced pro, he's played across Europe, he's played in the Premier League. You can't just stick a youngster against him, because that's when he clicks into his sort of gear and when he makes the most of his experience. And in defence, those errors that you make are far more costly, are usually fine. And to be honest, I think the fans at the moment kind of satisfied with the left back situation to a large extent, because we did another poll on Twitter. Don't worry, we're not going to be doing that 5 of these a week, so it could fill out the show, unless we have nothing for the mailbag, in which case I'll be putting all sorts of nonsense on there.
Yeah, so it's all on you. Get your mentions in the mailbag.
Yeah, so we just asked basically, would you prioritise signing a left back over signing a striker in the January transfer window? But 80% of people still want a striker.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to see why, because the striking options we have, you know, Aluko, it's some people don't even think he's a striker. They might see him as a bit of a more of a winger than a striker. So, and Bodvarsson, as we've already mentioned, is more of like a defensive kind of forward. He's not a massive goal scorer. Kermigan is in his last season, so a striker is definitely what we need to sign. But if there's budget there, you need to get a left back as well, I think.
Yeah, well, the question's over the budget, and the transfer window will run on and on, as it is still mid-October, lest we forget. And we will move on to your questions in the mailbag in a second.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Welcome back then to the part of the show which you ask us questions in. And that is the mailbag. It's not going away with the new host. We're still sticking it around because we still need, as you heard in the last section, content. So here we begin with Scott from the States, who says, the TT podcast host is dead. Long live the TT podcast host. Thank you very much for that, Scott. He says, I got to watch my second consecutive game thanks to Leeds SPN, as he calls it. And I didn't recognise the team in orange. Even if it would have ended 0-0, I would have felt like I had watched a completely different team than the one that lost to Norwich, also on TV. Am I naive to think that a trio of Aluko, Barrow and either Bodvarsson or Kermigan would produce enough goals to lead Reading to a successful season? Thank you for continuing the excellent podcast. Well, that's an absolute pleasure, Scott. Are those three /4 players good enough to lead Reading to promotion?
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, what is a successful season in terms of promotion? I don't think so. I don't, you know, Kermigan is a year older and he'll be coming back from a fairly serious injury. Aluko has never been that prolific. Barrow, again, his end product is questionable. They're exciting players, but I think if you're gonna get promoted and get at least into the playoffs, you need more of a goal threat than any of those four.
You know what I see in those players that's mentioned? I see a lot of creators. I see Bodvarsson is a good, as we said before, good creator, helps out his team. Aluko, I think, has already shown he's got a couple of assists, that he can pick a pass. Kermigan has fitness problems but can score. And Barrow, I'm still seeing him as a bit of a super sub myself. If we've got someone on the end of all of those efforts towards goal, then I think that's a much better looking strike force immediately.
I mean, you look at Kermigan, you know, historically his best seasons have come when he's been partnered with a striker, obviously last season excepted, but before that you had Kermigan partnered with Graben, and then Graben would be the one that got most of the goals and Kermigan would be like helping him out. Bodvarsson plays in a 4-4-2, I think, for Iceland.
Yeah,
and so again, both of those more larger strikers are normally there to help support a more clinical finisher. Again, this is kind of forgetting about Kermigan's great season last season, which...
Yeah, that was... I think that was... He scores a lot of goals, but then I think he almost... he does that because he has to. He kind of thinks like,
last season,
oh, fine, I'll score the goals then if none of you guys are going to do it. That's kind of what I feel with Kermigan.
Yeah, he always felt like, even last season, it felt like he was trying to link up with people sometimes, and they weren't
just
there.
Just wasn't there. I think, to round that question off, I think successful season, you need one more.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
So let's move on to Luke Jarrett. I said, just a fun little stat, ahead of the Sunday and Monday games, we were the only team to have won away in the top two leagues of English football this weekend.
There's another stat attack.
And I believe that's still the case, because no one won on Sunday away, and West Brom are currently playing Leicester, so who knows what's happened with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice to be the only team celebrating on the road. Reading Pete 87 says, "You mean Leeds didn't win?"
No, they didn't.
To be fair, we have a good record at Elland Road.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's surprising because obviously everyone always goes on about Elland Road being this horrible,
like a fortress.
But actually, Reading have quite a good.
Yeah, we beat them like 4-2 or something under Adkins, and Robson Carney grabbed a couple of goals. Simon Church scored in a 1-0 win in 2012, won again this weekend. So yeah, a 0-0 draw, I think, the season before after that. It's a place where maybe we should give ourselves a little bit more credit, perhaps. Derek Wormsley says, "What's happened to Reading's good game management from last year? If that penalty went in, it's another disastrous week."
I think disastrous week is a little strong. I can see where he's coming from, because obviously if you get a goal in the 84th minute and then you throw it away, then yes, you can see it as disastrous. But I think before the game, if we'd said 1-1 at Elland Road, you get a point away from home, you'd have been happy with it. So a disastrous is a bit strong, but you know, yes, game management is a problem. It's something that, as we've said earlier, Sam needs to really look at and try and drill into his players. Whether it is, okay, guys, once we get toward this closing stage of the game, we need to slow the tempo down, keep the ball away from the opposition, or whether it's just some, you know, good old fashioned lump it long and keep it
hope
up
for the best.
You know, kind of whatever. But you know, we can't keep giving away these opportunities to the opposition at the end of games. It's just shooting yourself in the foot, really.
Yeah, and we spoke about this earlier. I think in terms of how we would have, how if that penalty goes in, the way we view that game is still that Stam has done the right thing in his approach.
Yeah, he's still changed.
I think we can still take that, even if we would have drawn. And I think we can still take a reasonable degree of pride in having a point away from home. Point's never too much of a bad thing. And then going towards Sheffield United, I think we'd have just been asking for a little bit more progress than we have had. But ultimately, I mean, you've got to take your chances. You can only play what's in front of you. All those sort of cliches. Mm. And we've come away with 3 points. So that's all good. Waldemar Janoszak, has friend of the Sheffields, says, "After the Leeds game, the players did not come over to clap the fans as they usually do. Only Vito Minone. Is that payback for the booze?"
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't put it past them. We've seen McCleary on Twitter this week give it back to a couple of fans. But, you know, do you know what? I think it's probably just it's been a long, grueling game. They've kind of snatched victory there because of Manoni's save. They might have just been a bit like, oh, we kind of got away with it there, and a little bit like, okay, let's just get out of here type thing. But it is a shame, because obviously we've seen how expensive the tickets were for away fans. Ridiculous prices.
Yeah, good
like
point.
Absolute scandalous, really. So it would have been nice for them to at least have made the effort to go over and applaud those fans that have forked out their hard-earned cash. Credit to Manoni. He's probably the one that's feeling on top of the world.
He's the one who wants all the credit, isn't he?
I've just saved us this game, lads. Come on.
Yeah. I do agree with that. But I remember going, it was Derby away when Nick Blackman scored, and he just kind of stared down the fans evilly. That's, I think, when players are really unhappy with the fans, that's when you sort of notice.
Well, at least he's not doing the Matt Mills.
Or that. Yeah. There is also that, which we shall not forget. I mean, if players did that after a 1-0 win, that'd be a bit. Yeah.
That'd be in the papers all over the place, wouldn't it?
That'd be a little bit much, I think. I don't know how you know the state of the squad with the fans and how they see things at the moment. I do kind of think that the fact that it's a late penalty save just kind of meant that was it.
We've quite scraped a high.
Yeah, maybe if we'd have scored a second goal or something, then maybe things would have been different. Matthew Everson says, "Are there many teams you love to beat more than Leeds?"
No, I love beating Leeds. I just think that they call themselves a big club and they're all this and all that, but actually they haven't really done anything recently. So are they still a big club? And they're always going on about how great they are, and they're not even that great, and they've broken a few of our players' legs in the past. So
that has happened.
It's just like I don't know, yeah. Not especially in this division. There's, you know, Leeds are the ones that you really want to beat all the time. Or a Warnock team. So if we beat Cardiff, that'd be great as well.
There is always an enjoyment of beating a Warnock team. I think with Leeds is that you're not necessarily beating the fans of Leeds, I think. I think you're beating the people who just automatically expect Leeds to do well because they have a lot of fans. And that's what I always enjoy. Those sort of people who, I think it was the old Leeds manager Neil Redfern before the game says, they should be brushing aside Reading and taking themselves towards promotion, but you know, Leeds haven't taken themselves towards promotion for donkey's years.
Why
would they be doing it this year?
Yeah, especially in their current form as well. You know, as you said, they started brightly, but they haven't done much recently. So
yeah,
I don't know why it was expected that they just walk all over Reading.
I think that they suffer from the fact that obviously fans get excited about their team a lot, and every team has that, and every fans do that. But when Leeds do it, it's kind of like everyone is joining in with it. All the you know, the broadcasters,
magnified,
whatever.
Magnified. Yeah.
Everyone really pays attention, which they don't with Reading. And to be honest, that's one of the things that I like about being a Reading fan.
That's probably a good thing. Under the radar.
Exactly. That's how we get. Also under the radar on the weekend was Paul McShane, who was out with a hamstring injury, I believe. And Louis Burton asked, "Don't you feel that Paul McShane is?" Or he says rather that he doesn't feel Paul McShane has been at the races this season, and he asks, "Are we better without him?"
That's it's a difficult one. It's a big question. He is obviously the club captain. He does bring that leadership. He is very experienced. But if you're going to ask me who our two best centre backs were, I would say Ilori and Moore. And so while I value his characteristics and his attitude and his experience, if you're going to put your best players on the pitch, he wouldn't be in my first choice duo. So I guess in answer to that question, I'd say, yeah, probably. In terms of pure ability, yes.
I mean, I must agree. The only thing I'd add is I don't think Alou has been too much at the races this season as well. I don't think he's been at his best. And Liam Moore, I mean, I don't think he delivers a perfect performance that often. He just delivers a good 6.5, 7 out of 10 every week. As for McShane, I think the problem is that when we play a high line, he's the one who often you see chasing back, and you don't want to be that defender who's chasing back. I mean, he's our slowest defender anyway. Mm. And when he's chasing back, it's a sign that he's not quite seen the run in time and it's not quite happened. Certainly when Brentford scored against us earlier in the season, I felt like he was a little bit static, and you know, he's an experienced player. He's good to have around the club. He's the captain, as you say. But those performances on the pitch, we haven't been very good defensively this season.
I guess with McShane, it's also not helped by the fact that he keeps picking up these little injuries. He's never, in his time at Reading, he keeps picking up these little injuries that are keeping him out from having like a long period of games. Mm. He'll come in for, you know, 5-10 games, and then he'll be out for a few, and then he'll come back and he'll go out again. So he's not. Those little injuries are going to take their toll, especially on a player his age.
Yeah, when you want that defensive consistency, I think you said a minute ago, if Ilori and Moore are our two starting centre-backs for the rest of the season, for every game, they're all fit, they're not being suspended, I'm perfectly fine with that. Mm. I'll have a lot of confidence in that duo. Maybe a little bit of height or physicality lacking, but then that isn't something that McShane actually brings himself anyway.
No, yeah. And Ilori and Moore are both fairly pacey for defenders, so if we are going to play the high line,
yeah,
it
works better for them. Loyal Royal has asked, if we were guaranteed mid-table obscurity, would you take the quality of our goal at Leeds over 10 simple tap-ins? So this is basically the idea of, do you want beautiful football that may not lead success, or do you want boring football that does lead success?
entertaining football. Football for me is an entertainment game. So I would much rather watch football where you might not have success, but you're watching brilliant football every week and seeing goals and seeing attempts on goal. I think a lot of fans would probably agree, judging by comments before the international break, about how boring we are. And we've heard Westy say on the pod a number of times that people have stopped going to the games because of how boring it is. So entertainment is number one for me, probably, although that might just be a sign of the modern game.
Yeah.
Against modern football, hashtag.
I think that we've just been in that situation where last season, you know, they're saying about 10 simple tap-ins. I don't think we scored unpretty goals. We weren't scoring goals last year that were bad on the eye. We just weren't scoring enough of them. Mm. We'd only score once or twice a game. I think that was the bigger issue, as opposed to the quality of goal we had. Mm. It was the quality of the rest of the play that was the issue.
Yeah.
And the goal that we scored against Leeds was a great goal, but you're not going to get those sort of chances every week.
No.
Because that was, the game was stretched, players were tired. It's not necessarily about beautiful football, as the just sheer entertainment and the moment that it came in.
Yeah. Also, on the whole tap-ins thing, if you look at Manchester City at the moment, all of their goals are tap-ins. And they're playing brilliant football, so a tap-in doesn't necessarily mean it's not a good goal.
Joey Vandenberg, Kevin De Bruyne, tell me the difference in those. Lloyd Wall does add that is the goal at Leeds reminded him of Obita's at Fulham in the playoffs, the Bakuna's challenge, throwing the opposition and taking advantage. I do agree to a large extent, certainly obviously it came from the left-hand side, the goal itself. That's one of the things that sort of catching the opposition out and playing on the counter. I felt that we've actually been really good at it over the last couple of years. We just don't do enough of it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the players. You know, we've got like 8 wingers. So we've got the players to be able to launch counterattacks. So I do feel it's a shame that we haven't been doing it that often, because you've got so many pacey players. You've got Barrow, McCleary, Aluko, Popper, Harriet when he comes back. I could keep going on. You know, you've got so many players that can spring and, you know, run past players.
I think Harriet's got injured again, hasn't he?
Has he?
I think he was tweeting a couple of days ago saying he just wanted to be back playing football, and I think Stam had confirmed he got a little, I don't think it's another bad hamstring injury, but just another one. I do get the sense that he'll be absolutely tearing at the bit when he does get back. Let's just hope it's before 2019. Final one from Laura also asked, is there any coincidence that as soon as Wim goes, we win?
No, it's all Wim's fault.
Well, speaking of which, you'll find out exactly why we managed to win because of Wim in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
It's just as well that Wim isn't here, because if he was, he would be gloating about the fact that he was not only the only person in the prediction league for the Tarlhurst End Podcast to have predicted a win for Reading, but he also predicted that it would be a 1-0 scoreline.
Yeah, well,
So maybe. We'll move on swiftly from that and move to talk about Sheffield United away. But yeah, anyone who keeps on top of the prediction league, it's currently Wim on 7 points. He's now taken the lead. And then it's Handbags and Westy back on 6. Myself, Tom Crocker and Johnny Williams back on 4.
You've got to up your game there, guys.
I went for a draw. I went for 2-2. So if Vito bloody Mononi wouldn't have saved the penalty, I'd have got a point and I'd have been, you know, back in amongst it.
Damn you, Vito. Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. I've learnt my lesson. Hopefully we can all predict wins for Sheffield United away and we will all get some nice points on that. It is Sheffield United away next, as I've mentioned a couple of times. Their form is pretty decent.
Yeah, they look like a very good side. I've seen a few pundits actually saying that they look like they could be the you know, side to make a double promotion and really get back into the Premier League. So, yeah, and they are a very good side. They've got good players there. They've got the momentum with them, you know. So it's a tricky game for Reading, but again, maybe this win gives Reading some momentum to go and challenge United.
Yeah, well, we've got a good away allocation travelling with us on the weekend, haven't we? 3 coaches from Star, I think, or the club, or whoever's organising that is a great initiative. 5 wins and 1 home defeat for Sheffield United this season. They've only conceded 2 goals, but they've only scored 8 in 6 home games. That suggests this is going to be a very tight game.
Yeah, well, especially because Reading aren't that great at scoring goals either. So, you know, I think it could be a very tight game, and it probably will be. But it kind of just depends on how Stam sets the team up, I think. It's kind of in our own hands. If he goes for a similar to Leeds kind of tactic, make it hard for Sheffield United, then you might be able to get away with a win or a draw, but...
Yeah, the thing I worry about that is that if we go and play them as we played Leeds, then Sheffield United need only watch 90 minutes of action and they've got us sussed, and that all new kinds of problems will emerge, maybe.
Yeah, it's difficult. I guess you might just mix it up a bit. Start Barrow, bring in Kelly, you know.
Yeah, there's options. There's options.
So he can always mix it up and... You know, he's got so many options. He can always bring in another couple of players in, which might change the game from the start.
Well, I mean, Sheffield United have been the surprise package of the season. Anyone who's wondering why that might be, I think the clue is very much in their forward line. Billy Sharp and Leon Clark have had 4 goals each for them, with Clayton Donaldson, who they signed on deadline day from Birmingham, as the backup. This is a strike trio, with over 1,400 appearances over their careers across the three of them, and over 500 goals between them. That is a substantial amount of experience, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what Reading wouldn't do for a forward line like that, eh? I mean,
you know, only Bodvarsson doesn't have 500 career goals.
Yeah, I'll just wipe my drool up off the table. But you know, they're a danger. It's almost surprising that they haven't scored more goals with that forward line. I don't want to be pessimistic or anything, but you do kind of worry that what if it clicks for them against Reading and they suddenly score a hatful? Because, you know, especially last season, you think it was we got the odd thrashing throughout the season for reasons that we never really figured out. It was just races.
Yeah.
So you do kind of look at these games and the players they've got up front and just go, ugh.
Billy Sharp is the curse of the ex-player as well, isn't it? He didn't really have that great a spell at Reading.
Didn't really do much at Reading, did he?
Wasn't one of his better moves. And, you know, if he's in good form, these strikers are all strikers that know the Championship inside out, can punish some lazy defending, and I don't think we're quite solved on that yet, but the optimism is there that we can kick on.
Weren't Reading also linked to Clayton Donaldson? Last year,
Birmingham, I think that he is quite old, as you know, can attest from all these appearances he's had. But he wasn't cheap because he's at that point Birmingham's top striker, and he is a good striker. He's a very intelligent striker. Yeah.
So I reckon put money on Billy Sharp and Clayton Donaldson scoring, because that's the way the game works.
Well,
gamble aware.
Hashtag gamble aware. And I may as well say the odds at this moment: Sheffield United 21-20 if you fancy them on the win. 13-5 for a draw, and Reading back at 11-4. We didn't think at the start of the season that we were going to be 11-4 away to sides that have only just been promoted, did we?
No, but that's because at the start of the season we thought we had a better squad, they'd be more suited to the Stam regime, and we didn't expect us to have started the season so poorly.
The start of the season we thought we were good.
Yeah, the start of the season we were convinced we were going to go for the title, you know, so...
Still time, but to be looking, like as we talked about the Leeds game earlier, looking at the table, we're only 20th, so I think that's a good sign that we have to keep going. Like, this game is still important. We can't just say, oh well, we beat Leeds, end off. We have to go and get a result here. Other things to look out for, I think Sheffield United aren't stunning in terms of their possession, their passing, their shots, their tackles. They're all pretty, you know, statistic wise middling, I would say, but they are among the most booked and sent off teams in the league, which could suggest a bit of a feisty game.
Yes, which, do you know what, it might suit Reading, especially after they've just come, you know, they've gone to Elland Road and they've been a little bit feisty. They might go to is it Bramall Lane still? Have they renamed the stadium?
No. As far as I'm aware,
yeah. So yeah, they might go there and just do you know what, I imagine they'll probably try and repeat the same trick, because again, it's another, you know, big stadium, they got a really vocal supporters. So it might be that Stam tries to do the same thing again. Whether it'd work, I don't know. But
well, that is the mystery. We will find out on Saturday. I think the prediction league-wise, I think I'll keep my cards close to my chest at the moment. I think maybe I'll see what Wim's doing and then follow that.
You'll never catch up if you just copy him every time.
That's true. I'm 3 points behind. I'll copy his intention, but a different scoreline. So then I can slowly nick ahead of him. In terms of this podcast, Ollie Allen is going to take control of the podcast extra with Tom Crocker from the Wokey paper, and that won't be until the 27th is the next time I think they're due to record, because, you know, Ollie's a drunk student and Tom's on holiday. So it's good. I can put the libelous things at the back of the podcast.
Yeah, hopefully people won't have got to this point, especially Ollie. Hopefully he won't know
that. He's drinking, mate. He's freshers. That's what they do. He's university first years. And I'll be anyone who's contributed to the Patreon campaign. I will give you your dues next week, and hopefully I'll be here with Westy, I believe, next week. And from then on, I really do think we'll be playing it by ear. I think Johnny's going to take some shows. Just bear with us, because life has its mysterious ways of getting in its way of podcasting, even if it is why we were put on this earth.
Pesky life. getting all in the way and stuff. Gah.
Well, luckily we have Reading to keep us interested, and we'll be back, of course, after the Sheffield United game. Good luck to those going up. Shout loud, do your business, do your bits, and we'll see you next week, and come on, you arse.
It's fine.